But sometimes things and topics of interest are really valuable because they just feed our souls, because they feed our creativity, because they give our brains something to chew on, to munch on, to kind of mull on, to be creative with, to be spontaneous with. And I think ADHD brains crave that, and we need it almost in the same way that we need to eat a healthy diet. We need to eat a healthy diet of hyper-focus passions and hobbies and interests. And if we don't have a trail of hyper-focuses in our past, I think that that means that we're probably not doing too well. Hello and welcome back to the Future ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Grace, and this week we are continuing our mini series all about leaning into our brain's natural tendencies, what they do so well, what we find incredibly easy, and what we are good at. So if that's interesting to you, stick around. I cannot wait to dive into today's topic. Last week we talked a bit about my background and my thinking on this idea of focusing on the strengths of ADHD first before we talk about the deficits, and the importance of doing that so that we actually define what we are and who we are, instead of thinking of our personalities, of our brain wiring, of our behaviors in terms of what we are deficient in. So the things that we can't do, the things that we're not. And it's just that simple maths of, if you want to work out what something is, we need to actually talk about what it is in terms of its characteristics and its qualities and the facts about it, not talk about only what it isn't, because that doesn't really get us anywhere. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, I give a great analogy about describing a holiday. It's really, it just really helps to tangibly explain exactly why I'm so passionate about talking about identity and defining ourselves by what we are instead of what we're not. So definitely hop back to last week's episode if you missed it, because it gives a really excellent grounding foundation for this mini series and what I will be sharing with you. Life with an ADHD brain can be a wild ride, swinging between intense obsessions and hyperfocus to exhaustion and overwhelm. And sometimes these pendulum swings can feel very lonely in a world that doesn't truly understand neurodiversity. But what if our daydreaming, impulsivity, and fierce obsessions all make complete sense? What if we're not flawed or disordered, but rather living in a fast-paced world that wasn't designed for our brilliant ADHD brains? Believe me, I know firsthand that living with ADHD isn't easy, and we'll definitely talk about those challenges here too. But after decades focusing on the deficiencies, it's time for a shift. Join me as we explore the latest ADHD research and take a deep dive into topics like unconscious limiting beliefs, habits and productivity, mindset, self-care, and nervous system nourishment. I'll also chat to a range of neurodivergent guests, so we can challenge the status quo, change the conversation, and shape the future of ADHD together. Today's focus is hyperfocus. I didn't know I was going to say it that way, but that kind of came out perfectly. So I really want to talk about the quality that comes naturally to almost everyone with ADHD or who thinks they might have ADHD, whether you have an official diagnosis or you're self-diagnosed, and that is this ability to hyperfocus. I've always found it quite confusing that in the label ADHD, the word deficit is stuck right next to attention. So attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And the reason I find that so strange is because I've thought about this a lot. I've talked with so many people in the work that I do in Future ADHD. I've talked with experts on this podcast. I've read and consumed a lot of information. And from everyone that I've spoken to, from all of the very varied stories I've heard about the experience of ADHD and how that impacts men and women and other genders and children across the lifespan is that we don't have a deficit of attention at all. At all, at all, at all. In fact, I think that we have not just a surplus of attention, which is something that often gets contrasted against the deficit. That may be true, but I think we have a quality of attention. I think we have an incredibly high quality of attention. And that's where that relates to hyperfocus. And it also relates to that curiosity piece, that aspect of our personalities where if something catches our interest, and that's related to what science is now calling our interest-based nervous system, which is very different to an importance-based nervous system, which is what a lot of, inverted commas, neurotypical people have. We have this interest-based nervous system, and when something catches our eye, we don't just glance over it. We don't just skate across the surface of it. We don't just read an article or maybe listen to half a podcast episode on it. We, if we're incredibly interested in something, we hyperfocus. And what that means is that we prolifically and intensely and with a lot of endurance dive straight into something and we persist in asking questions, in doing further research, in doing deep dives, in wrestling with a topic that may be confusing to us or we don't think we understand yet or something where we feel like there's a piece missing and we need to discover what that missing piece might be. We are kind of excavators in that way, and I think that it's a specialist aspect of our personality. It's something that we don't really have to try to do. It's something that comes easily to us, that's natural to us, and that we do sometimes without thinking. And when that behavior shows up, it means that it's innate. It's how we have evolved to be, how our neurotype can function in a way that works for us, that helps evolve our species, that creates adaptive and creative and sometimes necessary survival strategies so that we can keep on reproducing. And how this shows up, particularly when you observe a group of children, is that you will see that there are a bunch of different ways that children pay attention. And sometimes children have a natural tendency to be able to pay attention to things that are put in front of them, topics that are placed as an obligation to study, topics that the teacher has said, we need to learn this, and the children dutifully are able to understand, to listen, to take in that information. And that is one way of paying attention. But quite another way of paying attention is this ability to be a self-starter, to have initiative, to be curious about something and follow that curiosity down a rabbit hole and do your own research. And children can do this quite well. I've observed this in my background as a teacher, observing how different children approach tasks, and some children need a lot of help to get started on researching and other children find it easy. And I think if you had a student with ADHD in a classroom, say, that was finding it hard to get started on research, if you just change the topic to something that they're interested in, suddenly that executive function has disappeared. That executive dysfunction has disappeared because that student is champing at the bit to explore more, and they are very likely to not only just research in class, to pay attention to that topic in class, but to go home and continue to watch documentaries or find YouTube videos or bring in books to show the teacher on that topic of interest for them. And this isn't really talked about, and I find that bizarre because it is a very valid way of attention being analyzed, of attention showing up. And it's, instead of it being a surface level attention that ebbs and flows gently across a day and can be harnessed by a teacher and drawn in, this is an attention that's probably a little bit less cooperative. It's far more sort of mysterious and intuitive, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And the topics that it will be interested in sometimes can't be rationalized, but here we are. This is how our brains work, and there is incredible potential. Because when you think about people throughout history who have contributed hugely to society, people like Einstein and Da Vinci and Thomas Edison, these people had brains that a lot of scientists are now speculating were this ADHD type of brain. These brains that would latch onto something and just wouldn't let it go. And there's a tenacity there. There's endurance. There's incredible persistence. And there's resilience as well, where you may be focused on something and you may come up against setbacks or things that don't go your way or failed experiments, and you just continue, like Edison did with the light bulb, continue to go back to the drawing board, continue to be curious, continue to pay attention and focus on this one task that you just need to perfect, this one thing that you just need to resolve in your own psyche. Can I create a light bulb? Can I create electricity? And thank goodness that Edison had a brain like that. The other thing that's not really spoken about in the quality of focus that ADHD brains possess is that idea of presence, of fully being present with a topic of interest in an all-immersive way. Often, attention is heralded as this sort of thing that can be switched on and off at a whim. You know, when you have a whole group of students in a classroom and they're paying attention to the teacher, they are present with the teacher. But we don't give a lot of thought or consideration to the fact that if a student is distracted in class, it doesn't mean that they're not present. It doesn't mean that they, I mean, there's another idea that people throw around that if you're not present in class, if you're not paying attention, then you must be stupid. You must have low intelligence. And that's not true either. What's happening, and I know this because this was a lot of the time my experience in school, is when I'm not present with the teacher, if I'm not present in the learning that's going on in the outside world, I'm attuned, I am highly and intensely present with my own learning, with my own inner world, with my own inner thoughts and my own speculations. And that is a form of presence. It is a valid form of attention. And it's just different. That's all. It's not less than, it's not a deficiency. It's just different. And so what you get when you have someone with a brain that pays attention on a deep level with hyper-focused traits, a brain that we call ADHD, is that you get radical curiosity, that ability to ask why and continue to ask why until you get to the bottom of something, to not just be satisfied with the first answer you get. That is an incredible skill. And the ability to be curious is innate to our brains, to look at very obvious things and say, but why do we do it that way? Why is the system set up that way? Is that the best way for the system to operate? Or even looking at nature and looking at the way that biodiversity operates and animals work and migration patterns and all of those things. Like when we think about people like Charles Darwin observing his natural world and drawing massive conclusions, that was all born from radical curiosity. And no one asked him to do that. No one sat down and said, you must now go off for 12 years to the Galapagos or whatever he did, something like that, and observe the migration patterns of this particular bird species. Now go and do that. No one asked him to. His curiosity fueled that for him. It was a propulsion that he could not resist. It was a life force within him. And I am in awe of that. I think it's incredible when I see that in people like Charles Darwin, and when I see the same spark, the same propulsion in my 7-year-old son as he masters origami or as he reads every book about geology back to back because he becomes obsessed with crystals and rock formations and sediment. I just think that's radical curiosity, and it's a superpower. There's another element to this hyper-focus quality, which means that when we, you know, have multiple hyper-focuses across our lives, there's often a joke on social media or on TikTok that ADHDers have like a trail of hyper-fixations in our wake. All of these things that we bought, these hobbies that we were interested in momentarily that we hyper-focused on and then forgot about. We have this trail behind us, but I like to see that as prolific. We have a huge body of work. And it doesn't always make sense. Like the things in our body of work might be really contradictory or really random, or we think, well, why did I randomly decide to get all of that darkroom equipment and start developing photos? Or like there are some really odd things that can come up, but I think that there's sort of two ways I like to look at these hyperfixations. One is that they're building skills, and we won't always know how the skills were helpful, but there might be skills that translate into other careers or skills that are just valuable in and of themselves. And that can be really valuable. But also there are skills that feed our brains. There are things that we are interested in that we hyper-focus on that maybe have no point. Like, you know, I heard of one girl with ADHD telling a story of how she became hyper-focused on hedgehogs and building hedgehog houses. And it's just so fun. And maybe there's not a lot of really obvious outworkings of how building hedgehog houses could really be valuable in, you know, a career in medicine or a career in journalism or a career as a teacher. I mean, maybe it could be too, but sometimes things and topics of interest are really valuable because they just feed our souls, because they feed our creativity, because they give our brains something to chew on, to munch on, to kind of mull on, to be creative with, to be spontaneous with. And I think ADHD brains crave that, and we need it almost in the same way that we need to eat a healthy diet. We need to eat a healthy diet of hyperfocus passions and hobbies and interests. And if we don't have a trail of hyperfocuses in our past, I think that that means that we're probably not doing too well, that we're really struggling and there's sort of bigger issues afoot. So I see it as a really positive thing that I have this really patchworky, random past. And I'm actually going to hop into that. I really want to give some tangible examples about my past. And I tried to think of all of the hyperfocuses that I've had, and there have been so many, and some of them have been in fashion, and some of them have been in cooking and perfecting one type of cake, and some of them have been in sports, and they've just been so many. But I really wanted to focus on the ones that helped build my career and get me to where I am today as the CEO of a multiple six-figure business with a staff of six, growing so quickly. And that is something I never could have imagined I could do. And when I look back at all of the things that I have learned across the last decade, being an entrepreneur in many spaces and trying out new ideas and different businesses, I can see that the things that I hyper-focused on and got excited about and built a website in one day and started, you know, becoming like, you know, obsessed with, those things created so many very valuable skills that helped me get to where I am now. And I think that that is just something that I'm really proud of, but also that is, I run with that. I use that to my advantage. I work with my hyperfocus, and I see it as something that's like a major tool in my toolkit in success and building a body of work that I'm proud of and making the difference that I want to make in the world. Okay, so let's jump into these real life examples from my past, from basically starting in my early 20s to leading me to where I am now in my early to mid 30s. I'm about to turn 34. So, back in my mid 20s, I had just been working as a parenting journalist for one of the major Australian publications. I was writing a lot of stories about education and parenting, and the transition from being working full-time, I guess, into being a mum. And I was on maternity leave looking for, you know, things to keep me busy, little projects, side projects, and I started an Etsy store. And that original store was creating baby naming posters. So I got really obsessed with it for like maybe a month or two, and I looked into how to design and learned graphic design skills and, you know, researched all of the different fonts I wanted to use and played around with designs, and then created mock-ups with a mock-up generator, you know, listed everything in my store. I was taking orders from people. I was doing custom posters for people. I was printing, getting things professionally printed. So there was a lot to learn, and I kind of burned through it and got a lot done and then kind of got over it, because that's sometimes what happens, often what happens with ADHD is that we are obsessed with something one day and then it's like completely dead to us the next. So I started that Etsy store and then I closed it. And at the time I kind of felt a bit like, what was the point of that? That was a bit of a failure. Like, why start something and be like moderately successful in terms of, I think I sold, you know, 50 or 100 different things, and I had custom orders and was dealing with customer service. And I got some reviews in my Etsy store, and then I just, I think I put it on like a holiday mode or something. So it kind of existed. It wasn't completely closed, which we'll get to later. But it was just kind of dormant. And then I also, while I was on maternity leave, started a magazine. So out of my education background and my parenting journalism background, I had become really interested in publishing, and I started my own magazine on homeschooling and alternative education. And that became the biggest homeschooling magazine in Australia. And we published 7 digital issues, and I was the editor, and I was managing contributors and reaching out to people and editing work and putting together issues. I was collaborating and working with advertisers who were paying us money to be featured in the magazine. So I was doing all of these things, and I had kind of no idea what I was doing. Like, my background had been in writing and editing for websites, for news websites in Australia. And I knew what I was doing in that regard, but I didn't know about advertising in magazines. I didn't know about full page spreads and how much to charge. I didn't know about how to actually print a copy of the magazine and get a huge print run of 1,000 or 2,000 out of China and import to Australia and ship out to our customers. Like, that was all really a huge learning curve for me. And out of that business, we created our very first homeschool planner. And that was my first experience of creating a digital product and selling it. And so we were trying all of these things, and we were moderately successful in them, in the sense that we had an audience. It was much smaller than our audience now with Future ADHD, but they were, you know, devoted to our work. They loved what we were doing, and we were serving, I guess, quite a small market in comparison to the ADHD market, because there are not nearly as many people who homeschool. But out of that experience running that sort of small side hobby business, I was able to get experience designing websites, doing logo design, working with collaborators, working with advertisers, as I said. And eventually we hired our own part-time staff, and we dabbled around with different setups, having support systems and working remotely with people. So that was pretty huge. And that networking opportunity landed me in an opportunity to speak on a panel at a conference. So I was doing a bunch of things, but these were all side project things. These weren't my main job, and it sort of felt like a hobby, and I just sort of thought, what's the point in all of this? So we still own that business, and it's very much on autopilot. We haven't really had the time to maintain it alongside of Future ADHD, since that's our full-time work. But that's still on the side, and that's still going, because it's something that people still need and still want. And even though it is very much a small portion of our income now, we don't want to just shut it down completely, because there are still people who need that work, and it is possible to set it up on autopilot and have it going largely without our having to be in the business working on it. To shift gears a bit, we have done a bunch of stuff around traveling and around renovating, and that was a whole season of our lives that was quite unique and quite different again. So when my eldest son, I've got 2 sons, and when my eldest was 18 months old, we decided to sell everything, to sell our house and to travel the world full time and be digital nomads. So we only had 1 child at the time. We have a 6-year age gap between our kids. And so we were just doing it with our eldest boy. And as a part of that, we started dabbling in photography and videography and creating kind of a persona around our travel family on Instagram. And so we were traveling the world. We were having so much fun. And in order to pay for experiences as we traveled, we started to work with brands. So we worked with Dreamworld in Australia, which is one of the biggest amusement parks in Australia. We worked with several Canadian clothing brands while we were in Canada, and they sent us clothing. We collaborated with them. I think the biggest deal we secured, and again, we had no idea what we were doing. We were just experimenting, hyper-focusing, having fun and working it out along the way. But the biggest deal we secured, I think, was $3,000 or $4,000 from one brand in really solid, good quality Canadian jackets for winter, ski jackets. So we were doing all of this stuff. We were building a photography library on our Instagram. We were practicing, editing it and shooting. And we started to get a small following. We had a few thousand, I think about 7,000 or 8,000 followers. And we started getting a lot of questions about how we'd managed to go from basic photography to this really beautiful landscape photography and lifestyle photography as we traveled. And so we built our own course platform from scratch, and we had dabbled a fair bit by that point in website design and designed several different businesses and online stores, and we sort of knew how to build websites from scratch and make them very customizable. And so then we launched, we created and launched a photography course, and we sold, I think it was like 150 or 200 spots in this course over time. And that was like completely random and out of the blue. We're not professional photographers, but because we had developed that skill and got to a point where people wanted to learn from us because we were relatable, because we had a really clear trajectory of, you know, that's what our photos looked like 6 months ago, and then they improved to where they were 3 months ago, and now they're at this level, and we're working with brands and we're doing branding opportunities. That was, yeah, something that we dabbled in for a while. And again, that was a side income. It was a side hustle. And we would have loved all of these, you know, different businesses I've mentioned to become our full-time, but sometimes things are just meant to be hyper-focused hobbies or, you know, side hustles. And just the skills that you learn by doing those things are more than worth it for all the time you put in, because you just get the chance to bootstrap things, to work things out without the pressure of a huge amount of customer service through a high volume of orders, because that can really snow you under if you're early on in your journey and you're not familiar with things like e-commerce and how to set up e-commerce, you know, payment platforms and gateways and all of the different things that go into email lists and funnels. And yeah, there's just a lot to know. And we failed forward, I like to say, and that's a fantastic term I've heard on other podcasts, that you, instead of just thinking about that we failed, we actually failed forward. We constantly found ways to use our failures to learn and to grow and to pick ourselves up and keep going. We also dabbled a lot in renovating caravans and RVs. So when we got to Canada, halfway through our 3-year trip, we bought a really cheap RV, and then we spent 20 days renovating it 24/7. Like, we were working so hard on it round the clock because we had nowhere to live, nowhere to park really. And we were relying on other people's generosity to let us stay at their place for a week or two in order to make that renovation happen. So we flipped a van and we traveled around in it, and then we sold it, I think a year later, and we made something like an $8,000 profit off it, which is really unheard of when you're flipping a van. Usually there's almost no margin in it, or you end up losing money on it because you put so much into the renovation. But we worked out a way to do it at low cost, but really make sure that it looked incredible and that we had put money into certain elements and put quality into the elements that mattered, and then cut costs where needed. And so that created a really profitable flip that we weren't expecting. But again, it got us hyper-focused for quite a while on, can we go into flipping vans and caravans, and can that be our business? And that was something we chased for a little while, but in the end we decided it wasn't for us. And I think that's partly because it's just not as guaranteed when you're flipping vans. Another thing I did for a very brief time during the COVID lockdowns was I started a podcast, and I didn't know a lot about podcasting. I just knew I'd always wanted to kind of have my own podcast. And so during COVID lockdowns, I kind of worked out some fairly basic tech, and I did 3 interviews with people in different parts of the world about just those early months being locked down and how each person's experience was so different. So I interviewed someone who was locked down in Malaysia. They had some of the strictest home lockdowns in the world, but you were basically trapped inside your home. So that was a really interesting interview. And then I interviewed somebody who got stuck on a ship in Antarctica right at the beginning of the COVID lockdown in 2020. And they got stranded for several weeks in South America. And that was quite a dramatic story as well. So I dabbled around with that. And then I kind of lost steam and interest in it because I don't know, COVID, it seemed like it might only last a couple of months at the time. And it was this interesting point in history. And then I ended up feeling like, well, I can't keep doing interviews like this forever. I'm already bored of COVID. I think everyone was getting bored of it. And I didn't really want to talk about it anymore. So I did 3 episodes and then I just stopped. And again, it felt like a failed hyperfocus. It felt like another failed project. But the reason I mention all of these things is that they were all incredibly important in my journey, and I wouldn't have been able to do what I'm currently doing now, running a company and having a staff of 6 people support me and managing deadlines and doing everything I do with my ADHD brain. I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have skills that I had built up over the last decade with all of these random hyperfocuses. And this will look different for everyone. This is just my story and my journey, but I tell it because I want to share how valid and how important the random things that we choose to spend our time doing can be. And sometimes, as I said, they're just good to feed the soul. They keep us healthy. They keep us interested and having purpose in our lives, even when other things might be out of our control, like our work environment or our close relationships. They keep us topped up and fuel our energy levels, but also they can teach us invaluable translatable skills, skills that can transfer into many different careers and career paths. And so I reached a point in my hyperfocus journey where I suddenly became fascinated and obsessed with ADHD around my own diagnosis. And I started listening to all the podcasts, reading all the books. I think I was, you know, listening to about 30 podcasts a week at one point and just like drinking in all of the information I could, because that was just something that I was craving and I needed and I was interested in. And out of all of that exploration and research, I decided to create an ADHD planner that was based on science, that was guilt-free and shame-free, and that helped people understand their brains in a way that they had never been offered before. And when I decided I really wanted to make a planner, I didn't feel like it was out of my grasp because I'd already created a planner. And when we needed to list it on Etsy, I actually went back to my original Etsy store that I had created, that I had started adding a few resources to over the years in the homeschool arena. And there were, you know, 10 different reviews for other products on there. And that starting point was how I launched Future ADHD and renamed the store and changed all of the listings and created ADHD planners. So that little store that had lain dormant all of those years ended up giving me a starting point for my next venture. And that was just something that really helped me in my journey because I knew what to expect. I knew a little bit how Etsy worked and it wasn't so foreign to me. And when we needed to do product photography and create mock-ups, we knew how to do that from our background in photography and working with brands. And my husband is a digital marketing strategist as well, and we had done a lot of work in copywriting and brand development and management and strategy for other brands across the years. And so we took to it like a fish to water because it was something that we had a lot of expertise in. And it wasn't something that made a lot of sense on our resumes. It wasn't something that we had, you know, solidly spent 10 years in one company. We had built everything from the ground up in a patchwork kind of fashion. And it still worked for us. You don't have to do everything in like a linear, structured, committed way and do one thing for 10 years to be a success. When we needed to write copy, when we needed to send emails, I knew how to do that because I have a background in journalism and writing. And when I wanted to create, you know, science explainer pages in the planner and make sure they were based on solid evidence, I knew how to research because of my journalist background. And I'm not saying that you need to have all of these skills in order to create things and sell them online, but I'm more so indicating that my random journey with all of the things that I had been interested in, it all made sense and it all really helped me create the thing that I was passionate about. when it came time to launch this podcast, even though I'd only done 3 episodes of a random podcast in the middle of a COVID lockdown, I knew a tiny bit of what it was like to interview people and to be on podcasts, and I'd been a guest on other people's podcasts before, so that world wasn't too foreign to me, and it just gave me the confidence to know how to be present and how to speak in this space. And I don't even think I mentioned this before, but when I was a journalist, I was interviewed on the radio a couple of times as well. So all of these random experiences, they all added up to creating a passion inside of me and reducing some of the obstacles I might have faced if I had just done nothing for 10 years. So why do I tell you all this? Well, I wanted to give a really tangible and practical example of what one person's experience can look like when they start to see their natural tendencies to hyperfocus on things, the quality of their attention, the resilience and the intensity of that attention, the curiosity within that, in a positive way, to see it as an absolute strength that we should harness as many times as we can, because it's easy for us, because there's less resistance and there's less friction. And I have found working with my brain this way has given me astounding results compared to trying to work in a way that I think I should be working and trying to force my brain to fit a mold that it really was never intended to fit. So I hope that this was encouraging to you. If you're feeling frustrated or discouraged that maybe you're not where you want to be yet, maybe you've had a bunch of failed business startups, or you've tried a bunch of hobbies and then you know, you're over them the next day, that I think we just need to trust our brains more. That's what I've decided works best for me, to even when it doesn't make sense why I would choose something, or I don't really understand why I'm so obsessed with something, I just try and follow that curiosity and see where it leads, because often when I do, some pretty amazing things can happen out of it. And I think I'm a lot happier as a result of letting my brain do what it does best and just running. It's like when you see a runner who is designed to run, they have an amazing runner's body. And when they're sprinting and they're just in that element, in their zone, you just think you're doing what you were designed to do. And that's how I feel when I'm running full tilt at a project and I'm absolutely immersed in it and obsessed. And I just think I'm doing what I was meant to be doing. This is what feels good and natural. I'm just going to keep doing it. I hope you found this episode helpful. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope that you tune in next week for the next part of my mini series, all about leaning into what we're already good at and about working with our brains. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait. So I'll see you next week. And if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with people that you think would find it valuable or helpful. You can email it. You can share it on social media. There's lots and lots of ways to do that. You can also rate and review the podcast on iTunes or whatever app you're listening on. And I would really appreciate that too. It means the world to me. So thank you so much for listening, and I will chat to you next week. Thanks so much for joining me for today's episode. And if you're keen for more, we have a lot of free resources on our website, futureadhd.com, where you can also buy our planners and support tools. Our Future ADHD planners are based on the latest neuroscience and have a unique build-as-you-go format, which makes them different to your average planner. This feature makes it ridiculously easy to pick up where you left off, even if you miss weeks or months at a time, without the shame spirals, guilt, or critical self-talk. Our digital version works with iPads, iPhones, Android tablets and Android phones, Windows and Macs. We also have a printable version for those who love paper and pen. Join almost 20,000 neurodivergents who have downloaded our planners and say that this is the first planner they've ever been able to stick with, because it's designed to work with your creative, inconsistent, divergent, non-linear brain. And if you want to watch a planner walkthrough or learn more about Future ADHD and our mission, check out our Instagram and TikTok, future.adhd, and of course our website, futureadhd.com.